Journalist Faye Flam interviewed risk communication expert Peter M. Sandman on March 3, 2021, about his top gripes about how public health professionals are communicating COVID-19 risk. This is Segment 9, Resuscitating CDC's Reputation. For the other segment, the complete two-hour interview, or other content on coronavirus risk communication, go to www.psandman.com.
Let us touch on CDC then. And we had all kind of expected CDC would revert to its sort of normal state of things. And you think it really hasn't. Can you talk about sort of how you see CDC not doing its usual job under Trump and what's happened since Biden has taken over?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of things. I mean, one is, you know, we all thought that CDC would become the media's main source of pandemic information in a Biden administration. It was said, widely said by public health people that, Ann Schuchat and maybe Nancy Messonnier, two real experts at CDC, would be reinstated as top COVID-19 sources. And it didn't happen. The White House remains by far the dominant source of information about the pandemic, and especially about how the pandemic is being managed. Now, CDC continues to put out advisories and continues to put out MMWR, the weekly journal it publishes, and they have lots of articles about COVID-19, of course. I mean, it's not like CDC isn't doing any communication. But there haven't been a whole lot of CDC pressers, as everybody thought there would be once Biden took over the White House. And, I don't know why that hasn't happened.
That is a great question, because I would have expected that. I would have expected it even under Trump. I still find it kind of shocking that CDC didn't have its own press briefings every week.
Well, apparently Trump told, pretty clearly Trump shut down CDC after Nancy Messonnier gave a news conference that was more pessimistic than Trump was willing to tolerate. I mean, she gave a presser in which she talked about telling her children that it's going to be, we're going to have a rough time, she told the world through the media about telling her children the night before that this is going to be awful. The president, said never again. And that was the end of CDC as a major source of pandemic information. But we thought Biden would turn that around, and he didn't. And maybe he figured the CDC's reputational damage was so severe that it was no longer a credible source. Or maybe he figured that the news was so good, vaccinations are up, cases and deaths are down, that he wanted the White House to get the benefit and not the CDC. And those are the two diametrically opposed hypotheses. The CDC had lost its reputational benefit, its reputational credibility, so it can't be the source, versus the news is so good, let's own it as a White House rather than wasting it on the CDC. I don't know if either of those is true, but it's certainly a mystery. The other bigger mystery is, how do we resuscitate CDC's reputation? I mean, it's pretty clear that CDC lost a good deal of its reputation in the first year of the pandemic. I don't want to overstate that. I mean, it didn't lose its reputation with a huge swath of the public. Most people, continue to trust CDC more than the rest of government, and they continue to trust science in general more than they trust almost any other institution. And they barely were paying attention to the ways in which CDC has lost trust. So I'm not talking about the public. I'm talking about a segment of the public. But it's a very important segment that was following carefully, that views itself as attentive to to the pandemic developments and good news and bad news and who's responsible and who's doing a good job and who's screwing up. And if you were paying attention to who's doing a good job and who's screwing up, CDC wound up in the screwing up category. I think that's indisputable. So there, trust in CDC among the people who were paying attention really took a severe hit. And the question is, or a question is, how do you regain that trust in those people? And, my own judgment is the way you regain that, the way CDC regains that trust is by being candid about the way it lost it, which CDC has never done. I mean, the dominant mantra is CDC was a victim of Trump. And it lost trust because Trump failed to, overruled it and made it say things that it then had to take back and, undermined its credibility. And it's all Trump's fault. And it's none of it is CDC's fault. That's kind of the underlying assumption. And I think that's just not so. And I think it's not sellable to the people who paid attention.
In what way? Talk about what you think was not Trump's fault. That was actually an internal, that was the CDC's fault.
Well, at least three biggies. Uh-huh. The first of them, it seems to me, is testing.
Oh, yes. They made some mistakes early on with the test kits not working, not getting, promising that tests would be available and not delivering.
Yeah, I mean the forgivable mistake is that their test kit turned out contaminated and didn't work. The unforgivable mistake is instead of throwing up their hands and buying somebody else's test kit, they said we'll make it work tomorrow. We'll make it work tomorrow. They didn't push the FDA to allow hospitals and labs and state governments to develop their own tests or to buy Germany's test or to buy somebody else's test. So everybody had to send their samples to CDC, which couldn't test them properly because their test didn't work right. And a very big piece of the US getting off on the wrong foot was because CDC, A, had a test that didn't work right, and B, continued to commit to a test that didn't work right, instead of saying, we screwed up, let's use somebody else's test. That was huge. And they did it wrong, and it had nothing to do with Trump.
Right.
So that's one biggie.
That's one.
That's the biggest of them. A second one, it seems to me, is masks. The CDC was certainly part of the public health profession's decision to tell the public that masks are useless. And then when they turned on a dime and when they changed their mind and started telling the people that mask wearing, far from being useless, is essential and obligatory. I mean, they went from useless and antisocial to essential and obligatory overnight. And they pretended that that change was because of new data, which was just flat out a lie. They had known since February. There were cases in Singapore and Germany and elsewhere of asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic people causing clusters. So we knew at least by February that happened, and that therefore masking people who don't know they're sick can keep them from unknowingly transmitting to others. They knew that or had reason to know that by February. And it was April before they changed their minds about masks and they were lying when they said new data. So I think they need to come out of the closet about that. Another one that I think matters is data collection. It's stunning to me that for the first year of the pandemic, almost everybody, journalists, state governments, individuals, almost everybody got their data on the pandemic from volunteers. You know, I mean, you know, you think as a journalist, what your sources are, and it's things like the COVID Tracking Project and the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center,
right.
Our World in Data.
Yes, the Worldometers. Yes, all of these different groups. That CDC did not have a sort of go-to place that these other people provided.
You know, and that seems to be changing. I mean, you know, the COVID Tracking Project, as you probably know, is shutting down by the end of March, because in its judgment, it's no longer needed. CDC is doing the job pretty well now. But for a year, you know, CDC was an incredibly unreliable, slow, inaccessible, incomplete, inaccurate source of information about the pandemic.
That's true. There were state government health departments that offered different kinds of information, though it was hard to get the big picture, especially if you live in a little state like I do, Rhode Island, and I would see what was going on in Rhode Island from the public health department here in Rhode Island. But you had to go to other places to see where the country as a whole was going and how we stacked up, and that big picture was important. You couldn't just follow COVID in Rhode Island and expect to know what was going on.
And you know, if you've been in this field for decades, as I have, that's shocking. I mean, every other big infectious disease outbreak I can think of, the CDC, whether or not it was the dominant news source, was the dominant data source. It was where you went for information that was accurate, up to date, and comprehensible.
Yes.
For the first year of the pandemic, it wasn't accurate, it wasn't up to date, and it wasn't comprehensible. So volunteers filled in the gaps, and that has nothing to do with Trump.
No, that is a fascinating piece of this whole story. And there's still a lot of discrepancies and confusion about what the data mean, that apparently some states count, you know, repeat tests as positives, and people tend to continue to test positive for a long time. And that can make the count look higher than if you only count the people who test positive for the first time. The number of some states test a huge percentage of their population, some states test very few people. And so you get all these numbers, but it's very confusing what they actually mean in terms of how many people in a given region are actually actively infected.
And there has been spectacularly good work by trying to figure out how to parse the numbers, how to make sense out of the numbers. And you know, it's people at the Atlantic magazine, for heaven's sake, who would have thunk it was there?
Yeah.
You know, it's volunteers of various sorts. It's not even, you know, public health professionals for the most part. It's people who gave up their day jobs and became pandemic data parsers. That was CDC, that is CDC's day job, or one of CDC's day jobs, and they didn't do it.